HB spoke to me, and others came up to me after I talked about some experiences with Mother. Shraddhalu said it would be nice to have more. And I didn't know what else I could say. And suddenly, in the middle of the afternoon, everything started coming. And many of these are very personal reminiscences. But, you know, I've led a very long life, a very full life. I've had 31 years with my wife, who was the complement to my soul, a daughter who is the head of the high school in Oroville, two grandchildren, who one of them who goes into the high school this year, and not so keen that his mother's the head of it. I've had failures and successes, many, many fine successes and many fine failures in business and other things. Sri Aurobindo has opened me to poetry. And all that I've accomplished, I would give up for 1 second more with Mother. 1 second. When she spoke to me about the gardens, which I related to you yesterday, there was one other thing she said. I would like you to begin with the Garden of Unity. And I aspired for that, but it wasn't the feeling of Aurovillians to do it. But you can understand something of Mother's statement, to begin with the Garden of Unity. It's what is so needed in Oroville, is this unity. And I hope a true Garden of Unity will come about in my lifetime. So let me go back now many years. When I first started to break out of the nest, my family was very religious. They were Russian Orthodox, which is allied, of course, to the Greek Orthodox and other Eastern European Orthodox traditions. And a very closed and close circle of people. And rather rigid. And I could not take that rigidity. So in my teens, I broke away. And I was in the army for a while. And then I got a scholarship to college. So I wanted to change. And I started to study Rudolf Steiner. And not just the anthropomorphic philosophy, but also his philosophy of biodynamic gardening. And most interesting, just near our church, our Russian church, not 10 minutes away, was a biodynamic farm. And I was introduced to organic gardening at a young age and met wonderful people there who showed me the difference in chemically grown apples and organic apples. And it was, for a young person, a real eye-opening thing. Because on these papers, the chemically grown apple had circles and was completely dead. And the organic apple had rays coming out of it like that, just shining with rays. And for me, that was a great beginning. But from Steiner, I moved to that Pandit that I mentioned. And when I went to the ashram, my family was totally against this. I was basically ostracized. And yet they even called the ashram in tears, the whole family, and my friends there had taken me in. And so I wrote to Mother, and I told Mother about this. And Mother wrote back, "Will they not understand if you simply tell them you have a way of your own?" And then, when I was going to leave the ashram to return to America, Mother wrote the following: "Go on boldly, following your way with joy and confidence, taking great care of one thing only, never to forget the divine." I told you a bit about my first days in the ashram, where Mother would come out early morning and give darshan from the old balcony. At that time, there was no third floor. She was on the second floor, and you felt you could almost touch her feet. She was so close. And one day, I was standing in my usual place, as close to being under her feet as I could, and she started looking at all the people. And suddenly she looked at me, and her eyes turned into diamonds and knocked me back 3 feet, physically back 3 feet. Eyes went right into my chest, bore into my chest, but beautifully. I was quietly ecstatic, grateful, humbled, touched in a way that no one could explain, except this one lady from Brooklyn, New York, who said to me, "Oh, that's not such a great experience. Go to the library and you'll see a painting by Janina and you'll have the same experience," because she did too. And so I went to the library, and sure enough, there was the painting with Mother's eyes spinning like diamonds. But it was a great experience for me. When I was working in the ashram in those early days, 1961, 62. I was a pretty wild fellow. Very wild fellow. And so one night, very late at night, when no one was on the streets, I had a young girlfriend come up to my room. I didn't do anything. So you can all relax. But at 6 o'clock in the morning, a young man comes to my apartment and he says, "Nolini would like to see you." Well, okay. So I go to Nolini and he says, "About last night, Mother asked me to tell you that she gives you total freedom in the ashram. But with that comes complete responsibility." Wow, 23 years old. Total freedom in the ashram. And complete responsibility. I had a hard time with the food in the dining room. It didn't suit my particular digestive system, especially dal. But I didn't tell anyone. And one day, someone comes with this huge brick of cheese. Huge brick of cheese, must have come from Holland or something. "Mother sent this for you because she knows you need a little extra." And so I said to my friend, "I'm going to share this with everyone." She said, "No, you're not." She said, "The force that's in there is all for you." And I ate every drop of that cheese. In Oroville, it was even more difficult. Very little food, not very hygienic, water problems in those early days. Now everything has changed, but I got amoebic dysentery, and I had it for 5 years. And at that time, we were given flagyl. Dr. Alok knows about flagyl, I'm sure. Almost as painful as the disease to take the remedy. So Mary Helen wrote to Mother, and Mother sent back a blessing packet for me with the following message. "He can't afford to be ill." But I got worse. And I was put in the nursing home. At that time, it was a Tresor, I think, nursing home. Very near the ashram. And I was in such pain that I wanted to leave my body. Or I asked Mother, and I wrote to her, "Mother, can I just surrender everything to you and let happen what will happen? Can I just pray to you? Whatever happens, accept. Or should I take this medicine?" Mother writes back, pray to me and take the medicine. Because I wasn't surrendered to Mother. I'm not surrendered to her today. It's a long way to go. Long, long way to go. But I understood what she meant. Maybe a small, small part is surrendered. And then you expect the body to recover? You haven't surrendered the body, you haven't surrendered the vital, you haven't surrendered the mind. Maybe a small, infinitesimal drop of surrender. So I took the flagyl and I got over it. And then came a time when Huta, how many of you have seen Huta's paintings of Savitri? Oh, not so many, okay. Mother worked with Huta for many years to paint Savitri. And Mother would make the initial sketch, and then Huta would take it from there and do the painting. Well, to preserve as best as possible in those days, Huta asked Mother if they could be photographed and then kept in cold storage and preserved. So Mother agreed, and Mother wrote me a letter. It was so beautiful because she had, this is the time when she had put me in the Matra Mandir, in the nursery. And she said, if you can spare one day a week or an hour or two each day, I would be very happy because I know that you will make a success of it. Mother would be very happy. Oh. So I did it. And it was a long, long work. And these were the first slides that took transparencies of Savitri, which had been shown over and over again in Oroville and around the world. Now at that time, on your birthday, Mother always sent you a card. And I had been receiving cards from Mother since 1962. And many of you must have some cards from Mother, where she would write, Bon Fet, in huge writing, exclamation point, and then your name. And it was such a treasure to receive these cards from Mother on one's birthday. One also had the opportunity to go to Mother on one's birthday. And this is a very, very interesting experience that I've had. After 1962, they built the third floor for the mother, and she didn't come down to the second floor after that. I'm going to go back and forth a little bit as I see things, because these are such beautiful experiences to bring the soul a little closer to her feet. I would enter her room, and there were no walls. It was a spacious, spacious place. No walls at all. And then it would take me quite some time to walk to her to put my head on her feet. And she'd greet me with this great unfold and put my head on her feet. And she'd give you the card. Now, when I go to Mother's room on November 17th and February 21st, I see that it's a tiny little room, and in less than two steps, you're in front of Mother's chair. Without her, I'm nothing. There was an aspiration to have a choir in 1961. And many of the people in that choir are still in the ashram today. Some of you who've been to the ashram many times may know Richard Pearson, who's the botanist, and Ratna, Dolly, Lilu, and many, many others, Tublu. They're still there. Some of them even a little older than me. And we formed a choir. Now, we must have had 20-something people, and it was a beautiful choir. So I had brought some sheet music with me, and they had some sheet music there also. And we learned Christmas songs. So my friend Marilyn said, "You write to Mother and tell Mother that you're going to sing for her on Christmas Eve." So I write to Mother, "Mother, we want to sing to you on Christmas Eve under the balcony." No answer. So this Marilyn pushes me further. "You write to Mother again. She's busy." Oh, now I realize, you know, why did I listen to her? But there's more to come. I write to Mother again. "Mother, on Christmas Eve, we want to sing to you under the balcony." No answer. Marilyn says, "Write to Mother again. This time she'll answer you." And she was a very powerful lady, persuasive, a little dominant. So I wrote to Mother again. And Mother writes back, "I would like you to come and sing by the samadhi." You know, I was so naive. I had no idea that the word would spread all over the ashram. And there was hardly any place to walk when we got there with the choir. There was just one little tiny path and then a small area by the samadhi where we could all stand. Ashram was filled. Now this is 61. And it's not the populace that you see today. You could walk on the beach and you might pass two people all evening. there was only mother's car and the governor's car and bicycles. There were no motorcycles, no cars in those days. Quiet, quiet, quiet ashram. So, I line the choir up, and they're facing Mother. Mother comes out on that little balcony there where the service tree extends, and they open the window for her. So I'm looking towards the samadhi, and the choir is looking up towards Mother. I give the tones for the first song, I give the downbeat, and the worst music you have ever heard in your life, like cats screaming and fighting with each other. And my friend Dimitri said he had never heard anything so bad. And he had heard a lot of music in his life. What was the problem? We had never sung outside, and the wind was blowing, and they couldn't hear each other. I turned around, and I looked up at Mother. I said, Mother, we're singing for you. Not one mistake the rest of the concert. Not one mistake. Everything sung to perfection. There was one boy who's become quite famous in France now, Prithvinder Mukherjee. He's a writer and he's been lauded by the French government. He was crippled pretty badly and wanted to study music. And so he asked me, will you write to Mother and help me to get a scholarship to England to study music? And Mother wrote back, why does he want to go to England and not Germany to study music? I mean, Bach and Beethoven and all the great composers, Germany was the place. Anyway, he did make his way in time. Now, I'm going to go back a little bit for the time I went back to the U.S., roughly 63 to 68, and tell you of a couple of beautiful things. I would write to Nolini about what was happening, and he would write back to me. And this you'll find rather humorous and strange, because I'd write him a long letter about what was happening with all the disciples in America that I knew. And he writes back, oh, your fine letter came today, just when Mother was wondering what was happening with everybody there, and you have explained it all. Mother was wondering. Mother knew everything. But it was so sweet, you know, to help a young fellow. And one day, I said, I'm going to hook a rug. I'm going to learn to hook a rug. And I'm going to hook it in Mother's symbol with blue and white, about this big. So I got monk's cloth, and I got the hooks, and I got the finest wool, and I learned how to do this, made the sketch of her symbol, and it turned out really, really beautifully. And I sent it to Mother. And Amrita wrote back that the day it arrived, Mother began using it for her feet. So my next project was to learn to do mosaics, and I made her symbol in mosaic and sent it to her. Now, at that time, I was going through a lot of experiences. I told you one yesterday about the voice telling me to go to California. But there are experiences that, we can talk about. They are gifts from the divine. But after one experience, when I met Sri Aurobindo, Mother asked Pavitra to write to me because she verified the experience, and she said, it is better not to recollect it mentally because a degradation might come about that would render it quite useless. And I think this goes for all of us. These deep inner experiences we should keep to ourselves. Maybe we have a partner with whom we could share something, maybe not. But I feel, even after 50 years, I've told very, very few people. Only a few people close to me. And then experience upon experience came, and I wrote to Mother about some of my difficulties. And Pavitra wrote back, Mother is not answering these personal questions any longer. It is time to tighten your girdle and find the answers within. And some of you have said to me, well, you met Mother. Yes. And I knelt at her feet, but I kneel at her feet now, and there's no difference. In fact, my experience, only my experience, is that she has so universalized her body that she has put it into each of us. And this is what Nalini had told me also. And I don't know that I told all of you that, so I'll recount it one more time. It was on my birthday in 1979 when I went to him with Mary Helen. And, you know, he was so welcoming to me. He always treated me with such love. He could be the Japanese lion at the gate, you know, for some people, fierce looking, and people stayed away. With me, somehow, he was just the opposite. All love and tenderness, compassionate, warm, answer any questions I had. So he sat us down, and after a long talk about Oroville and the problems that I had written to him in a long letter, he said, regarding the problems, it need not be this way. She is trying a thousand different ways. And then, becoming very, very quiet, he looked at Mary Helen and he pointed at her. And he said, your body. And then he pointed to me. And he said, and your body. And then he pointed to himself. And he said, and my body. We think they are different bodies. They are not. They are all her body. She has put a part of herself into each of us. And you are here because of that. Because as I look at you, I feel the mother. I feel her now in this room. We are so blessed just to be here, just to be in their atmosphere. When my wife was taking her last breaths, was a long and painful death. But she never complained. And she smiled at me, and I looked at her, and I said, I'm calling Mother for you. And she said, I am too. And I said, you are? And she gave me this huge smile and said, of course, and passed. When we moved to Oroville, she had put so much into me that people said it took 12 people to keep up with me, planting and caring for the flowers. And so what did I do but go to the Lal Bagh with a whole van full of flowers that people had collected in California, a whole group of us, and collected seeds. I grew those seeds. I had these exotic plants from the U.S., and I took them to the Lal Bagh, which is in Bangalore, the Lal Bagh Botanic Garden. At that time, it was the most famous garden in India, I think. Yeah, maybe still is, but Bangalore's in pretty bad shape. As many of you know. And I met Dr. Mari Gowda, who was the curator, and they were so grateful that we began this great exchange program. And they had these beautiful Hawaiian hibiscus, big hybrids, lovely flowers. I brought them back and started to grow them and send them to Mother. Now, they had to go from Oroville to the ashram. So I'd put them in a bag and put the bag in a box. And then on the motorcycle, I'd take them in. And Tara Johar, who did most of the questions and answers with Mother and the commentaries, because Mother gave most of the flower significances in French. and then they had to be translated. The moment I gave her those one flower, it went on for months, actually. Then she would take it up to Mother, and I'm sitting by the samadhi, and I'm listening to Mother's voice. Magnifique! Superb, whatever Mother would say. I mean, she was so ecstatic about these flowers. And she named them all for Auroville. Beauty of Auroville, charm of Auroville, and so forth. Firmness of Auroville. And then one day she said to Tara, we need a bit more universal name. So we'll call these the new creation. Beauty of the new creation, charm of the new creation. So we see now that Auroville is the new creation. And there's only one other flower that she gave two names to. And the first name she gave was Miracle. And then she named it Heir of Auroville. So the Heir of Auroville is Miracle. Oh, I sent her probably between 60 and 80 flowers in that year and a half. And these reverberate, these significances reverberate in my soul constantly. For example, the Italian basil that we all use, the culinary basil with the big leaves, has a white flower on a spike like that. Mm-hmm. Sent it up to Mother. Joy of union with the divine. Then I sent her the myrtle bush, you know, famous in ancient Greek. The hero would be crowned with the myrtle. To live only for the divine. Then I got some seeds of a lobelia, an annual flower, a light blue. Your mother named it Remembrance of Sri Aurobindo. And it went on and on like that for all these beautiful flowers, zinnias and so many others that I sent to her. That's forever. We can all make the contact with these flowers. We can all receive the message with which they are vibrating and available to us. I told you about Mother giving me the Adesh to bring down a new music. And we had initial choirs in Auroville, good choirs, small groups that met. We did some performances from composers, Aurovillian composers. But it wasn't until 2003 that I received the message, if you will, that the music was going to descend in a collective body through the power of one word, Om. And then the Om choirs began. And I think most of the ashram has attended an Om choir. We have a man who was injured badly and is paralyzed from the waist down. He was in charge of the dining room, still is in charge. And he would come to the Om choir in the ashram and pull himself up the steps with his hands. Now he's become weaker, so they've made a chair for him. And he is an example to me of that willpower that we need to go through. And he's an example to everyone there. He can't even hold his head up any longer. It just falls like that. But he sings Om. One time, this has to do with the lands of Oroville. We had two very different groups with opposite opinions. One group, which I was a part, felt that the land for Oroville should be purchased immediately. And at that time, it was very reasonable. Very reasonable. People were asking 1,000 rupees, 1,500 rupees for an acre, sometimes 2,000 rupees an acre. Another group said, no, 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 we must give these people whatever they would ask because it's been their land for centuries. Again, I said, but this is for Oroville. Mother's creation. So mother's son, Monsieur André, came out one day and we had a meeting. And I asked him if he would take this problem back to mother for a solution. And here's mother's answer. Buy the land now. You do not know the power of greed. And today, 1 acre of worthless land in Oroville is worth, they're asking 1 crore. Roughly $250,000 for an acre of worthless land. And they're getting it from speculators and others. So I think I'm coming to an end, and I share with you my last birthday in front of mother. It was 1972, July 29th, a week from today, and you know, we had been reading notes on the way in the bulletin, all about mother's experiences in transforming the body. We heard her cry out in pain upstairs, and we knew that she was burdened still with thousands of requests probably every day. And so we felt not to take her time. So I went in. She greeted me in a strong voice. Bon fait. And I went to her. I put my head on her feet. Just for a few seconds, because I didn't want to take too much time. And I lift my head off her feet, and she says, look at your card. So now I have to open my card in front of mother. And I open my card, and there's the old name, Richard, and the new name, Narad. And then I burst into tears, and I don't know how long I was on her feet crying. As in a mystic and dynamic dance. A priestess of immaculate ecstasies, inspired and ruled from truth's revealing vault, moves in some prophet cavern of the gods. A heart of silence in the hands of joy. A body like a parable of dawn. That seemed a niche for veiled divinity, or golden temple door to things beyond. Almighty rhythms swayed in her time-born steps. Her look, her smile, awoke celestial sense even in earth stuff. And their intense delight poured a supernal beauty on men's lives. A wide self-giving was her native act. A magnanimity as of sea or sky enveloped with its greatness all that came and gave a sense as of a greatened world. As might a soul fly like a hunted bird, escaping with tired wings from a world of storms, in a haven of safety and splendid soft repose. One could drink life back in streams of honey fire, feel her bright nature's glorious ambience and preen joy in her warmth and colors rule. A deep of compassion. A hushed sanctuary. Her inward help. Unbarred a gate in heaven.